Okay, Scott, we'll go into our public hearing at this time, and yeah.
Good morning. My name is Scott Simpson. I'll be the hearing officer today for our public hearing. We'll also be doing another public hearing later on this afternoon if we've got some other individuals that show up a little later in the day. All written comments have been provided to the commission at this point, and we will now take oral testimony from any individuals that want to comment on those items found under finalizations on the agenda. Those are items 11 through 15. Just to keep things moving forward, I will call you up to the mic as we move through the various topics. I'd ask you to keep your comments to 5 minutes. I'll give you the signal when you're running out of time. We've got a lot of things to move through today, and just fairness to the commission, we'll try to keep you at 5 minutes. So the first item that we will take is number 11, the firewood restriction. Do we have any individuals that want to comment on number 11, the firewood restriction? Seeing none, we'll move on to number 12, which is fall turkey. Anyone to provide comments on fall turkey? If not, we'll move on to number 13, archery equipment restrictions. And I would ask first name on the list, Ron Kolbeck. Ron, if you want to come up.
Oops, excuse me. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, Secretary Hepler. My name is Ron Kolbeck, Salem, South Dakota, here representing the South Dakota Hunter Education Instructors Association again, dealing with the archery restrictions. Obviously, last month, you decided to remove the requirement for bow hunter education. Feel very strongly that these restrictions have worked in the past very well along with the bow hunter education. And the concern here is that if you take away both the education requirement and the restrictions, there's really no guidance that the commission is providing to bow hunters, people that want to start bow hunting, on what is the appropriate equipment they should be utilizing in the field. So that's the main focus here. Looking through the proposal, and I'll just address the ones that are proposed change. Number three, arrow rests that have more than 3 inches of continuous contact with the arrow. My understanding with this one is that was really a way to get around auto-loading bows. So the system in which the bow actually auto-loaded the next arrow to shoot, and this is the requirement to basically get away with that. Some states have actually been more specific and said no automatic loading bows. Electronic devices mounted to the bow that aid in the taking of game, however, cameras, video cameras, cell phones, lighted sight pins, and changing that to electronic device mounted to the bow to project a light beam or image to the target. Really what this deals with is electronics allowed for taking of game. I'm not talking about the cameras and other things that are there to video, you know, the hunt. Really what we're talking about here is devices that primarily measure the distance to the target and will actually set your sight pin to that distance. And what the concern here is that that's going to actually encourage people taking a lot longer shots than they currently do today. It's important to understand that most bow hunters, when they come to bow hunting, they're coming there because of the challenge, of the desire of getting close to that game. And I really don't think this is a restriction at all. It's just a way to do that. And I will also say those devices aren't used allowed in competitions or anything else today. And there's no reason they have a place in hunting. Number six, compound bows with a let off of more than 80%. Really what that requirement was is to be in line with Pope and Young and their ethics committee, and they continue to maintain that 80%, and I would recommend it as well. Compound bow shorter than 28 inches, measured top of the and the measurement is an issue because the industry measures axle to axle, not top to bottom of the bow, so that we have different measurements here. Actually, personally, I don't have a problem with that one being removed because of the way it's being measured today anyway. I don't think it's effective today. Telescopic sights. Telescopic sights are basically similar to your scope on your gun. They magnify the target, and they're primarily used in target competition when you're shooting at 60 to 80 meters or up to 100 yards in distance, where that is necessary. In no way do we want to promote people taking 100-yard shots in a hunting situation. There's just too many variables that come into play that make that unethical and increase the likelihood of wounded game. An arrow including the attached broadhead weighing less than 275 grains when hunting big game animal. This one really goes along with the poundage that you have down below. And really it's a matter of having the proper penetration when hunting. You need to have the weight to carry that broadhead through the animal, through the target. If you don't have that weight, regardless of how many pounds you're shooting, it wouldn't matter. You need to have the two in conjunction to really be effective. An arrow that is less than 26 inches long when measured from the notch of the nock to the end of the shaft. And really, my understanding with this one, along with the length of the bow, we had several years ago, before we put restrictions in place and started hunter education, we had people out there trying to shoot bows out of vehicles, believe it or not. And this was kind of put in place to put restrictions in place that they could not shoot out of vehicles. People that are going to be out there doing illegal things are going to find more efficient ways anyway. Arrow on the broadhead, obviously we need to have that. The poundage, we have currently the poundage being different for mechanical broadhead versus a fixed blade broadhead. Every state has decided to do this differently, and we have a difference for elk versus deer. I think that's important that we keep that in mind because, quite honestly, even at 40 pounds, most mechanical broadheads are not going to perform appropriately. In those states that have chosen to have elk, different poundage for elk, all of them have gone to 50 pounds, not 40 pounds required for elk. And the other big difference with bows, it makes a big difference if you're shooting a long bow, traditional bow, versus a compound bow. 30 pounds with a compound bow is a lot different than 30 pounds with a long bow. So recommending no change there as well. Round to take questions, comments later. Thanks.
Thanks, Ron. Next up is Jim Twomley.
Thought I had everything laid out. Hi, my name is Jim Twomley. I'm from Parker, South Dakota, and I'm going to first provide my personal response, and then I'm also here representing SDVI, and we have a couple other SDVI members to go through it. And my concern is I have a problem talking in front of a mic, so I'm going to read my statement if that's all right with you folks. I've been a bow hunter since early 1980s. I've harvested two moose, three black bears, and over 40 deer with my bow hunting equipment. I was one of the original bow hunter education instructors, moving up through the ranks to master instructor and finally state coordinator for the program for up until a year after it went online version. I have also served as president of SDBI for 10 years prior to about 4 years ago when I stepped down from that role. During that time, SDBI was asked to provide equipment restriction updates to the department, and actually SDBI met for over a period of a year, coming up with a list of requirements that we felt not only provided the ethical and safe harvest of big game animal, but it also did not impair on any bow hunter entering into our sport. Anybody that wanted to hunt it could get into here. We didn't feel that any restriction should limit the accessibility to bow hunting. We want more bow hunters in this program. The changes that are being proposed go against, in my opinion, the ethical pursuit and harvest of big game animals in the state of South Dakota, the changes they're recommending. The when the commission, as Ron stated, when the commission last week or last month decided to do away with bow hunter ed, that took a learning curve away from the new bow hunters that are coming into the sport. That program dealt in depth with shot placement, ethical shots, the safe and practiced way of harvesting an animal. Where is the vital on an animal? What do you have to do to get that animal to die quickly after an arrow shot? That process during that bow hunter education was one of the main focuses that we spent 3 to 4 hours on every class teaching and going through. One of the things that we discussed, what is a legal broadhead? And these are the samples I brought. And during that class, we had lots of discussion on how a broadhead works, what it does, and how does it have to effectively harvest that animal. How much blood do they have to lose before you can harvest them? And all that stuff pertains to equipment selection and what to do on it. The National Bow Hunter Education Database provided that on average, we averaged 900 new students that took the course from the year of its inception and through last year. We had an average of over 900 people that got into bow hunting. If they took the course, if they took the time for the course, it's safe to assume, in my opinion, that they became bow hunters. I don't see where any of the current restrictions that we have in place limited anybody's access to becoming a bow hunter. Bows nowadays you purchase, I just purchased a bow for my granddaughter. It goes from 22-inch draw length up to 30-inch draw length. It goes from 30 pounds to 70 pounds. So saying that designing a bow that you're preventing somebody from getting into it, they can buy a bow, and all your manufacturers nowadays have that range. It's not like on my bow, I got to buy a 29.5-inch draw length to get where I got to go. That limitation is gone by the production. So we have to limit, in my opinion, the draw weight, the equipment selection used, here again, to cleanly, safely, and humanely harvest the big game animal we're pursuing. And I've sent, the commission already has my original copy of my information that I had on the individual items, but this is my main focus on that, was that we have not, in the current system, prevented, in my opinion, anybody from entering the program that they wanted to.
Thanks, Jim. Next up is Dana Rogers.
Dana Rogers, Hill City, South Dakota. Secretary Hepler, commissioners, appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today. President Twomley from SDBI talked about various issues with technology. I'm the secretary of the South Dakota Bow Hunters. I'm gonna try not to repeat some stuff. I wanna take it from a little bit different angle. There's a little bit of mysticism in some of this because it's not quite as easy to understand things, mathematics, kinetic energy, different types of weapons. But I want you to think about that we have minimum calibers for hunting big game. There's a reason that we have minimum calibers. It's because of the energy required in the shocking power. With bow hunting, it's got to be blood loss. It's got to be hemorrhaging. And some of these particular items are concerning to me as a bow hunter when you talk about a lighter arrow shaft. So you're instead of throwing a baseball, you're throwing a wadded up piece of paper, thinking of it like that. With a 40-pound draw weight and a lighter shaft and a shorter shaft, the law currently stipulates that it's for big game when talking about adding the ability to use a expandable broadhead. So the odds wouldn't necessarily be in favor of someone slightly built or a young hunter drawing an elk tag with very few points, but the opportunity would be there if these pass. In other words, if all of these pass, there would be an opportunity for someone to use a lighter shaft, a lower poundage bow, and use that expandable broadhead on an animal that it just flat would not penetrate at those low levels, and when you're talking about an elk or a big-bodied animal. So the kinetic energy piece is quite critical. The wording of the big game is critical. Now, some of these things probably will pass. Many of them may. In fact, we are open to quite a few of them, actually. But I also want you to think about something. These come from the Archery Manufacturer Organization. The AMO is the organization that sent all of this information out to all the states requesting changes. That's the companies who build all of this equipment to sell. We can't bait in South Dakota, but you can go into Shields and you can go into Cabela's and you can buy any manner of mineral, salt, any of that kind of stuff. Just because it's legal to sell in a place does not mean it's legal to use. When you get a speeding ticket, the officer has discretion. He doesn't have to write a speeding ticket. These are discretionary starting points, in our opinion. It's not making someone an illegal person or a criminal necessarily, but it's an ethical starting point when we're talking about kinetic energy to get the shaft to enter the animal and do what it's supposed to do. So I would just ask and caution when looking at some of these things, do we want to give people more opportunity to take shots they're really not capable of doing with that electronic sight or a telescopic sight? Or even more dangerously, do we want to put a weapon in the hands of someone that's really not capable of doing a job on that large animal because we're not having bow hunter education anymore? They might not know that. So just please think about that. I appreciate your time, and I appreciate everything that you guys are doing. Thank you.
Chairman Jensen. Jim, I'd have you come back up in your capacity with SDBI.
If I may. Jim Twomley, president of SDBI. In addition to my personal testimony I just gave, I gave the commission the chance, and if you want to look at those, by the legal definition of a broadhead that we have currently in regulation, those broadheads are legal for hunting a big game in the state of South Dakota. The first two, if you look at the insert that the blade is set into, is plastic. And please be careful. I don't think they're real sharp because I've been using them in my program for 20 years, but be careful, they may be. They're plastic, they're not designed. The original definition of a broadhead said to be metal construction with two cutting blades. Now with the plastic, with the new definition that we have in place now, they are made of plastic with blades put in on a pivot. The one's actually an expandable broadhead. The broadhead folds up, and upon shot, it's got to fold down and open up. It's an extreme example of expandable, but you can imagine the amount of energy needed to force that blade to open, especially on a critter as big as an elk. And unfortunately, our big game regulations apply to everything from turkey up to an elk. So that is why we feel that the broadhead and the arrow and draw weight of the bow have to be larger in order to cleanly, ethically, and humanely harvest the game we are pursuing. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. That's all the individuals that I have signed up for the archery equipment restrictions. Is there anyone else that would like to provide testimony on archery equipment restrictions?
Commission Secretary Helpler, thank you for your time, your service, what you do. My name is Jake Lipke. I am from Garden City, South Dakota. And I guess I'm just kind of going to read what I've got here, and then we'll kind of go through the second page a little bit. Once again, thank you for your time, serving the way you do. I would like to address you today concerning the proposed archery equipment restrictions or easements. Mainly I would like to address the minimum arrow weight or minimum draw weight. Personally, I don't think this is a good idea, removing these, as we have heard previously, can cause a significant increase in the wounding and not recovering animals due to the penetration abilities of the arrow. Which, as you heard Dan Rogers mention, the kinetic energy. And the following page, the second page here, you'll find a little bit explanation about kinetic energy and the formula for calculating that. Basically, the kinetic energy is the amount of energy. It's measured in foot-pounds that an arrow has. And then on the second page there, you'll see in the middle of the page there's a chart that I printed off, and I got this information. You'll see on the top of the page, the website there. But it's the recommendations for the amount of foot-pounds of kinetic energy needed to, you know, harvest game animals. You'll see small game there, 25 foot-pounds. Medium game, such as deer and antelope, at 25 to 41 pound range. Large game, such as elk, black bear, boar, it's listed here, moose, that 42 to 65 foot pound range of kinetic energy, and then big game, 65 or more foot pounds of kinetic energy. So just some real life numbers for you. My son, he's 12, he shoots a Hoyt Ignite bow set at 25 inch draw length. You'll see at the bottom of the second page there his actual setup, which he's shooting a 370 grain arrow. His arrow speed, which I have a chronograph to measure this, and I did this last night, as a matter of fact. But his actual arrow speed is 185 feet per second. And with a draw weight of 42 pounds currently, which at the bottom there you'll see test one produces 28 foot-pounds of kinetic energy. Which falls in line, with the medium game you'll see on the above chart. But then move down to test two, which is close to the GFP minimums currently, an arrow weight of 320 grains, which is the lightest arrow that I could come up with to test with. The GFP minimum currently is 275 grains, but his arrow speed at or sorry, go down to his draw weight then, set at 31 pounds, GFP minimum is 30. His arrow speed with that 320 grain arrow at the 31 pound draw weight is only 162 feet per second, which only produces 18.6 foot-pounds of kinetic energy, which is, as you'll see by the above chart there in the middle of the page, is, you know, way below the recommended minimums for the kinetic energy. So I guess in closing, I think that reducing these numbers, the arrow weight minimums, the draw weight minimums, can be and likely will be detrimental to, you know, just the aiding and the overall recovery of big game animals. So, and once again, you know, I just wanted to give you some hard evidence and numbers. You know, we can sit here and talk about numbers all day, but you'll see some evidence there on the second page. So once again, thank you for your service, thank you for your time, and thank you for the opportunity for me to testify before you.
Anyone else with public testimony for the archery equipment restrictions? All right, seeing none, we will move down to number 14, the refuge and boating restrictions. And the first individual that I have is Roger Hatling. Roger.
Good morning. My name is Roger Hatling. Excuse me. Commissioners and Secretary Appler, thank you for having me here. My concern is Swan Lake. You know, if this had a 40 or an 80 acre plot of public land in the middle of it, you know, that would be one thing. But 80, I'm not sure on how much, but it, just by looking at the map, 80% of that is owned by the state as a WPA. And to close that to boating during the hunting season is just not good. It's not. I mean, we're trying to get, well, the charts that he had. We're trying to bring kids and stuff into hunting. And what are we telling them when we close a WPA just for, well, never mind that part of it. But anyway, it just needs to be, I think it needs to be left open with, I don't know how many of you fish, but to navigate the water like that with an electric trolling motor, it is very dangerous. It will become very dangerous if you get it caught out in the middle of there during, you know, during bad weather. And unfortunately, diver hunters hunt during bad weather. That's the best time for it. So I thank you for listening to this, but it's something that's one that needs to be left open for both boating and, you know, with a gas or a, you know, electric trolling motor, whatever they want to do. And the small areas around the outside, that's what we passed the law for. They can post that, they can put buoys up, they can put, you know, no trespassing signs on the private part of it, and go from there. Thank you for listening.
Next would be George Vandell.
I can be brief. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, Secretary Hepler. You failed to mention I was part of the winning golf team yesterday. Yes, I brought the anchor. I was no help whatsoever. I'll be brief here. I'm president of the South Dakota Waterfowl Association. I've chosen to let individual members comment on individual refuges. My comments are going to be a little more general in nature. And first, I applaud the Commission for taking a look at this issue. Refuges have a tendency to separate a public resource, in many cases public land, and public access and try and partition it. And I don't envy your position in that. I know how difficult those decisions are. A couple of things I will point out is the department is looking really hard at trying to provide additional public access, and I applaud them for doing that. As a waterfowl association, we're going to try and help the department by identifying some areas that with a little bit of minimal work might provide some better access for boat hunting. I know of several spots that just with a little bit of effort could provide better access for a game production area or a waterfowl production area. I'd just like to call your attention when it comes to the issue of refuges. What kind of struck me this morning was this last page on the Swan Lake. When you look at that page, look at the tremendous amount of potential resting areas there for waterfowl. There's no shortage of water for waterfowl to rest in the state of South Dakota. The meandered lakes issue, non-meandered waters issue, identified almost 600,000 acres of non-meandered waters in the state of South Dakota that also can provide resting areas for waterfowl. There's only about 250,000 of those acres that are currently open to the public but could be closed. And that's the other thing to factor into this, that if landowners choose to provide resting areas for waterfowl, they can do that. And there's a lot of potential for that. I am not aware of a single time that waterfowl have left the state of South Dakota because of hunting pressure. Never have. I've hunted in this state my whole life. They leave when the weather gets bad. They may move. They may go from one area to another. But South Dakota is unique in having that water base that we've always got potential resting areas for waterfowl. The one refuge I would like to comment on is a little near and dear to my heart, and that's at Whitewood Lake. As a kid, I grew up hunting on Whitewood Lake. I think that was one of the, at the time, with its hemi marsh condition and a lot of vegetation, was one of the best duck hunting places in the state of South Dakota. I didn't see ducks black out the sun, but I can remember as a kid seeing those ducks in the sky as the sun came up. That was absolutely astounding. That was a refuge that was created in the 70s to try and provide better snow goose hunting opportunities. I don't know if it ever fulfilled that. I don't know if it's ever going to go back in my lifetime to be in a hemi marsh, but I would certainly encourage you to take the refuge status off of that. It's a great opportunity for duck hunting. It's got good public access, and again, that's a meandered public water, and that's in Kingsbury County. I guess my final comment would be I think your valid attempt at trying to find compromise by using electric motors as a potential for waterfowl hunting is the thought is kind, the thought is good, but I too question the safety of using those electric motors. There's been three major advances that I can think of: the smokeless powder, what it did for hunting, sonar, also developed by the military, what it did for fishing, and a fine gentleman by the name of Ole Evinrude, who developed the internal combustion outboard motor. For those of us who own outboard motors, when we crank that throttle over, it still gives us goosebumps. They're an absolutely ideal way to recreate and to move a boat. They're safe. The motors are getting more and more dependable. They're getting more and more, they're lighter, they're quieter. And I just think you're doing yourselves and the public a disservice by making people take chances by using those electric motors. I've never used one for duck hunting. There have been a couple times I bailed people out who did use electric motors. I don't think they got the thrust and the horsepower to get through some of those waters, particularly if the wind comes up. I would just encourage you to think hard about your decision before you put people out there in those electric motors. I think they're dangerous myself. There's nothing better for duck hunting than a little six horse or whatever outboard motor. Do you folks have any questions for me? Thank you very much. I appreciate, again, your effort at looking at these refuges. I know how tough that is. You're going to take another look at the Missouri River refuges. Those will be just as tough. But, again, always keep in mind when you're dealing with public waters and you're dealing with a public resource, you got to keep those open to the public and open up as many of those acres as you can. That's one of the most important jobs you folks can do. Thank you.
John Simpson.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Game Fish and Parks members. My name is John Simpson. I live here in Pierre. I represent myself. I happen to be a waterfowl hunter, similar to the previous testifier, for a long, long time, in the neighborhood of 65 years before I, when I started with my dad. So I've seen more than one duck slew and more than one duck and goose, and I'm interested in the proposal on Swan Lake. I don't hunt Swan Lake, but I'm aware of it. And there's a whole bunch of these you folks are looking at today. The reasons for a lot of these changes, as proposed, stated that it was to simplify administrative rules and provide more recreational opportunity, except for the Swan Lake one. The Swan Lake one talks about reducing waterfowl harassment, reducing disturbance of staging waterfowl. And similar to the previous testifier, I've been aware of waterfowl refuges for a long, long time, mostly here in the Missouri River system, 35 plus years. Based on that experience, I generally have a dislike for waterfowl refuges because I don't believe they perform their intended result, and they really do limit public opportunity. Public opportunity is one of the stated very wonderful goals of the Game, Fish, and Parks Department, and I applaud that, and I hope they can succeed with that goal. In reality, most refuges just seem to provide a benefit for adjacent landowners and not benefit the public or the resource. And this proposal has been considered in a little bit different form. Using a musical analogy, it's the same song and dance with a little bit different arrangement of the situation you looked at earlier this year. And for all those reasons, I would oppose this particular Swan Lake Refuge proposal and hope you can deny it. Thank you.
Next up is Chris Hessler.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, and Secretary Hepler. I'm Chris Hessler, Executive Director of the South Dakota Wildlife Federation. I'm here today to speak specifically about the Swan Lake refuge changes, our proposed refuge. We're opposed to it for one simple reason. You know, throughout the years, the non-meandered water has been a fight, and the Wildlife Federation has been probably at the head of it. And right now, I don't see where Swan Lake is doing anything wrong. We hear the complaints from the landowners that they need the roads opened to move their equipment back and forth from the fields, safety issues with ambulances getting in there, maybe something. Swan Lake is a fine example of public waters and private being needed. There's a great public boat ramp there that doesn't block any of the road for the use. Plenty of water, great fishing, easily accessed, primarily owned by the public, so I urge you not to put any restrictions on this water. It's a prime example of local interests and public interest working together, and we need more of those. Thank you.
Before I get to Charlie, is there anyone else that wants to provide public testimony on the refuge and boating restrictions? If not, Charlie, I'd ask you to come up.
Good morning, Game, Fish, and Parks Commissioners and Secretary Hepler. Thank you for having this opportunity for us to give public testimony at this time. I'm only going to talk briefly on two refuges, Lairdall Slough, located in Hanson County, McCook County area, and Silver Lake, located in Hutchinson County. Our club met last night, and we support the existing regulations on those two. They do provide staging area for waterfowl in an area that is water short, except for right now, maybe, you might guess, but generally speaking, we don't have water that holds geese. I grew up on a farm southwest of Silver Lake when I was in high school and middle school or grade school, and I can remember the Silver Lake held waterfowl, and they provided hunting opportunities around the area, and it still did. And last year, for the first time in many years, with the lake level up, we had snow geese, and people had an opportunity to harvest a lot of snow geese there. So we, the members of the 2990 Sportsman's Club, ask you to leave those two refuges intact. That's all I have to say on those two refuges. Thank you.
Thanks, Charlie. And Charlie wanted to lead off the discussion on our final topic under finalizations, which was the Fish Limits Reitz Lake, number 15. So, Charlie, go ahead.
All right. Thank you for, again, allowing me. My name is Charles Perkusik. I'm here wearing two hats. I'm going to speak personally, and then I'm going to sum it up with the club response. I sent you guys a note, email, about the Reitz Lake. We discussed this at our meeting last night. This is my public testimony, which you should have, hopefully. I thank you for allowing us to do that via email or mail. It's important that we get an opportunity to voice our concern. Last night we discussed, now I'm going to wear the other hat, please. Last night we discussed this at our club meeting, and our members feel that we're setting a bad precedent when we are allowed that this agreement, if agreed upon, would, for those 5 months, allow us only to take one fish. Then when the agreement comes off, we revert back to the state limit, abdicating your authority to set limits on an agreement part, we feel is a bad precedent. And we strongly oppose that. And the other things we also agreed on is having the ability, if you do put infrastructure on the place, that if the agreement comes null and void, you have that opportunity to go back and remove that infrastructure that was paid for with sportsman's dollars. And I don't think I need to read much more, but last night at our 2990 Sportsman's Club meeting, we agreed to this. So I wore two hats today. I thank you for your time. Thank you for your service. I know you have a tough decision to make, but I thank you for the opportunity to allow us to voice our concern. Any questions of me? Yes, Mr. Olson.
Mr. Chairman, is that right?
Yes, go ahead.
Commissioner Olson, how many people were in attendance at the meeting?
Last night, we didn't have a lot this summer, but they were notified. You know, we had several emails we'd have going out, and we had five that showed up. But we had several people that called me prior to the meeting and voiced their concerns.
Thank you.
And I will tell you this much. I don't have social media. The only social media I have is an email. I have no Snapchat or Facebook or any of that. Don't believe in it. Don't have time for it. And to be real honest about it, you can ask most of my friends. I don't have a cell phone. So...
Mr. Chairman.
So, any other questions?
One more right here.
Yes. I just want to thank you for all you do for that club. I know that you are very active in keeping things going in that, and I just want to thank you for that.
You're welcome very much.
Next up, John Simpson.
Again, ladies and gentlemen of the Game Fish and Parks Commission, in reading through, my name is John Simpson, excuse me, I live here in Pierre, and I'm representing myself. In reading through the proposal, very similar to what previous testifiers said, the daily fish limits change, well, 2 6-month periods on that body water, and evidently that proposal was presented by the title holder of the body of water we're talking about, who happens to own the submerged land that's under that public water. And I'm not sure if that proposal for those fish limits was carefully reviewed and discussed by fisheries biologist staff in the Northeast region. Perhaps someone in the department can answer that. If it wasn't, I would question you know, the validity of the proposal and the reasons for it. Why would the landowner of submerged water want to propose those kinds of fish limits? And I don't know the answer to that. And I'm not sure we'll learn the answer today. We might. For that reason, and for the reason, my understanding is that there's a fee involved, too, between the department and the landowner. And I have a lot of difficulty accepting the fact that you're going to use sportsman's dollars to ensure public access on a public resource to harvest a public resource. I just believe that that particular approach doesn't match up real well with the two Supreme Court decisions that say the water and the fish are public property. And so for those reasons, I'm not in favor of this proposal, and I hope you can reject it. Thank you.
Next up, Chris Hesla.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Chris Hesla, South Dakota Wildlife Federation. South Dakota Wildlife Federation is opposing the proposed Reitz Lake and Game Fish Parks Access Agreement. And for this basic reason is the two different limits of fish. If you treated everybody the same year-round, we'd probably be in favor of it because Reitz Lake is a special lake, but with the two different limits and creating two different classes, sportsmen and fishermen, we just don't believe in that. Reitz Lake in the past was a great deal. It was a great place to fish and everything else, but I think it's gone beyond its useful use to the sportsmen of South Dakota. I don't believe it's worth what the landowners is asking for the access to it. What we suggest is we thank the Reitz family for the years of fishing that they did provide to the state, pull up the ramp, take out the parking lot, and let them have the water, and thank them for what they did. Because right now, without the limits being fair and equitable to everybody throughout the year, I don't think we should spend sportsmen's dollars on access to it. Thank you.
That's all the individuals that have filled out the sheet to testify. Is there anyone else that wants to provide testimony on fish limits for Reitz Lake? Seeing none, Chairman, I think that concludes the public hearing.
Okay, thank you, Scott. And we're going to take a 15-minute break here, but